I'm using very straightforward language in this short devotional series about the television time bomb. Back in February 1993, the world was outraged when two 10-year-old kids kidnapped and murdered a 2-year-old boy in broad daylight in downtown London. 10-year-olds? Why are 10-year-olds getting into the crime business? In two separate studies by a research group at the University of Pennsylvania, children were asked, how often is it all right to hit someone if you are mad at them? Well, the study showed that children who were heavy viewers of television, more often than light viewers, responded that it is almost all right to hit someone. Unfortunately, children who believe it is usually right to hit someone grow up to become next-door neighbors. And it's no wonder we live in a violent society. The question is, how much farther can we go? What are the limits of violence? A survey of recent history is not very reassuring. In the first half of the 20th century, one nation stood out above all others as the epitome of Western civilization. Its universities were the most highly respected in physics, chemistry, biology, sociology, psychology, music, philosophy, even theology. Its literature, symphony orchestras, and ballet companies were the best in the world. It was the world's industrial leader. In the 1940s, this most enlightened and advanced nation in the world starved, tortured, and butchered 6 million people of another race. During the 1980s, the same thing happened in Cambodia, and tens of millions died at the hand of communism in Russia and China during this century. Most Westerners and North Americans probably think of the Holocaust in Nazi Germany as if it were something that happened on another planet. Surely something like that could never happen again, could it? Consider the strength of the resurgent neo-Nazi movement in Germany today. There are millions of Germans who openly or secretly support the Nazi philosophy of hatred of foreigners. In 1990, this group was responsible for 375 acts of violence. The next year, there were 1,483 acts of violence. And in 1992, these right-wing extremists were responsible for 2,285 acts of violence and 17 deaths. The geometric progression of violence is somewhat similar to what happened with the budding Nazi movement in Germany back during the 1930s. Listen. Could it happen again? Yes. It's apparently happening in the former country of Yugoslavia, even as I speak. But could it happen here? In Canada, in the United States, in North America. Dr. Thomas Radecki, a psychiatrist, stated back in 1985 that our country's sale of children's war toys was the most massive sale of war ideology to a generation of children in any modern democracy, exceeded only by Hitler's Germany. Consider this. At the time of the Holocausts in Germany and Cambodia, the citizens of those nations had not been programmed to accept violence as a casual way of life by years spent in front of the television set and by violent rock lyrics. Today they have. Could it be that, given the right conditions, a Holocaust is more likely today than ever before? Let's ask that question of Simon Wiesenthal. Renowned for his ceaseless pursuit of Nazi war criminals, Wiesenthal often speaks to college audiences about his activities. He's often asked, could it happen again, even in the United States? His reply is, yes. All you need is a government program of hatred and a crisis. If it happened in a civilized nation like Germany, which was a cultural superpower, it can happen anywhere. He says, when I was a young man in the 1920s, our answer to Hitler was to laugh and make jokes. How could a man with such crazy ideas succeed? Crisis and hatred. Think of the crises of terrorist violence with the George Floyd tragedy here in America. World uprisings. Then couple that with the pandemic, COVID-19 crisis. A fuse lit and burning in every country of the planet. The only thing that keeps many people from acting like monsters is the restraint of law. And remember, in Minneapolis and Portland and Washington, D.C., and other cities of the world, when the law isn't restraining people, they do act like monsters, don't they? The Bible predicts it. If the day should come in which violence against a certain minority group becomes politically correct, it could happen all over again. Consider the following experiment. The October 1983 issue of Psychology Today reports the results of a poll of more than 650 readers. The question, as posed in the July issue, was, if you could secretly push a button and thereby eliminate any person with no repercussions to yourself, would you push that button? 60% of the respondents said yes, 69% of the men and 56% of the women. When asked if they had anyone specific in mind, many of the men named public figures. Women tended to select bosses, ex-husbands, men who had victimized them sexually, and former partners of current lovers. Many people said they would do away with entire groups. One 29-year-old man posed an intriguing question. If such a device were invented, would anyone live to tell about it? The implications of this are astonishing. More than half of the people you meet on the street would kill you if they considered you undesirable, if they thought they could get away with it. The truth is that human nature has a bent toward evil. Without God, the only thing that stands between us and the barbarians is a civility that television is intent upon destroying. Remember Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes? Did a program a few years ago about Adolf Eichmann, one of the principal architects of the Nazi Holocaust. Well, he began by asking this question. How is it possible for a man to act as Eichmann acted? Was he a monster? A madman? Or was he perhaps something even more terrifying? Was he normal? Now, most self-respecting viewers would be outraged at such a suggestion. How could a man who organized mass murder be normal? Well, this startling question came in an interview with Yehiel Denour, a concentration camp survivor who testified against Eichmann. A film clip from Eichmann's 1961 trial showed Denour walking into the courtroom, stopping short, seeing Eichmann for the first time since the Nazi had sent him to Auschwitz 18 years earlier. Diner began to sob uncontrollably, and then collapsed in a heap on the floor as the presiding judicial officer pounded his gavel for order in the crowded courtroom. Was Diner overcome by hatred, fear, horrid memories? No. Diner explained to Wallace that all at once he realized Eichmann was not the godlike army officer who had sent so many to their deaths. This Eichmann was an ordinary man. "I was afraid about myself," said Dainur. "I saw that I am capable to do this. I am exactly like he." "Yes," said Wallace, summing up. "Adolf Eichmann is in all of us." And friend, until we face this horrifying truth about ourselves, we will be unprepared to face up to the depravity that each of us is capable of. Unless we take steps to prevent it, we may find ourselves sliding into the abyss and doing things we never dreamed we could do. Science, evolution, and education, which Socrates argued would eliminate sin, have done nothing to improve man's moral value. Only the gospel of Jesus Christ can change hearts. What about you, friend? Have you ever wished someone dead? Have you ever murdered someone's reputation? Do you hate anyone? Are you part of the solution or part of the problem of violence? Do you realize the incredible potential for evil that exists in the hearts of ordinary people like you and me? There is no way any sinful human being can control the restless passions of an unconverted heart. Only God could change the heart. But even after the heart is surrendered, it has to be guarded from being reinfected by those old corrosive passions. The only way to stay pure is to put the passions to death. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 to 8, the Apostle Paul says, "Put to death whatever belongs to your earthly nature." And then he lists the passions he's talking about: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language. In other words, illicit sex and violence. But how is this possible? How do you put something to death? By starving it. Those self-destructive passions cannot thrive without nourishment. Christ said it was out of the heart that come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, Matthew 5:15-19. Individual acts of sin are merely symptoms of a deeper disease that festers within the heart. So we cannot afford to feed the disease. There is a fire within you. Never bring gasoline anywhere near it, because if you do, there will be an explosion and you will be in trouble. Whenever you read certain kinds of novels or watch certain programs or movies, you are feeding the sinful nature. When you read the movie advertisements or even some of the reporting, you are feeding the sinful nature. You're adding fuel to the flame. In the titillating, lust-evoking, seductive society we live in, the eyes must be controlled. That's why David says in Psalm 101, verse 3, "I will set no wicked thing before my eyes." He had learned this lesson. his lesson the hard way in the incident with Bathsheba. David lost 4 children from complications that arose as a result of his sin. What a terrible price to pay for straying eyes. So he made a vow, I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. So, friend, don't feed the beast within you by watching violence and impurity on the television set. With God's help, you can starve those impure passions to death. When you come to something on television that violates your code of ethics, change the channel. And make sure you buy a good remote control that can take a lot of abuse, because you'll be changing the channel often. Better yet, use the off button. However, all of this is in vain if you haven't given your life to Christ. You can't starve the sin in your life unless Jesus Christ is in control and old things have become new. You must be born again. When that happens, Jesus will place in your heart a new desire for spiritual things so that you will love what you once hated and hate what you once loved.